Hello everybody, James here, and we are going to be asking your questions to the Dutchman for 35 minutes. Hey, do you know what? We've got books, we've got t-shirts, we've got podcasts you want to review. We're out every Friday and Tuesday. We're just going to get straight into the questions because, goodness me, ever since we started this like supplemental podcast where we answer your questions, I think the question load has times by at least five. So we'll do as many as we can. But before we do, you, Dutch, on last Friday's episode, you promised us a story about Carlito, Caribbean Cool, when he was first in WWE, yeah. But Carlito's first ever match and you booking it.
Well, I was booking it and things were going good, and little Carlitos was running the hard camera. I mean, it stays in one place, and during the matches, I would look up and I would see him standing behind the camera. And then we started a campaign that we were going to buy the company. And one of our major sayings was, when we buy this company, there will be no place for anybody with the last name of Cologne. And then when we would say that, we would turn and look at the hard camera. Because everybody in the arena would see us looking at Carlito. So you have to be stupid not to know that we were going to do something with him. So, and then we did this a couple of weeks. And every time we would look at Carlitos, our floor cam would put their, and there was Carlitos looking back at us. We're looking at him. We finally come to the time, and I said, this is what we're going to do. We're going to involve him in the story. So finally, we had him, we were doing an interview, and I think I don't remember what happened that brought him into the ring. But I think we said we said his name again, and he stepped out behind the camera. And we said, "Hey, don't Ray Gonzalez, who was my Puerto Rican heel. He was like the Ric Flair of Puerto Rico. He was over and great talker, good looking guy. And he told little Carlitos, he said, "Hey, just don't step out. Why don't you come down here if you feel that strongly about it?" And he came down and he went in. "Hey, man, I don't got nothing to do with with this wrestling thing. And, you know, my dad, and I'm going to college and I'm doing." And we said, "Shut the hell up, you little bastard." And all of a sudden, I think Ray slapped him. Oh, when Ray slapped him, here he come. And he started punching Ray, and the crowd come off their feet. They wanted, and he hit me so hard, I swear to God, I thought I owed him money. Because he hadn't been trained. He actually hit me a shoot right on the jaw. When mother, I won't finish that. But then we beat the crap out of him, and in come Carlos. So, okay. Now, he went behind the hard camera the next week, and we had Carlos Matt. We're beating the crap out of Carlos, and in comes Carly. Same way, boom, de boom, de boom, de boom. And this time, I talked, you know, last Friday about how violent the crowds are. We didn't hardly make it out of the ring. We coming down, the people were all over us. So I said, okay, I'm gonna book a match between Ray and Carlitos. And this was before he even started training to wrestle. And we had the match of Ray and Carlitos. And I think Carlitos, he may have had a week of training is all he had. And I sold out, or he sold out. And that's how we got him over. And then, of course, later on, WWE noticed him, good looking guy. And he went up there for a run. Now he's going back for another run. But I started him out, and I'm very proud of what he's done. Good guy. As long as he don't hit me again, we're fine.
Was he I know you sort of left for Victor Quiñones shortly after that, didn't you? But did you see that Carlito was a draw in Puerto Rico, or was he like a short-term thing before he went to OVW and WWE?
No, he was a draw. You know, with the name of Cologne, they got to use you on top. I mean, you know, you got to follow the legacy. And so him and his dad in matches, or him and his brother Eddie in matches, they did well. And the reason I jumped over to the other company is I asked them for a raise, and business was good. And they said, "Well, we can't really afford it right now." And I said, "No shit, really." And I knew what they were paying some of the other guys. I said, "Okay, I'm out of here." And I left and went to IWA, and it took me about 3 months. And I'll tell a real quick story. IWA was Samuel Vega's company, and I left Carlos's company. Carlos's company at that time was doing a 12 to a 14 rating. And the little IWA, which was Sabio's company and Victor Quinones, was doing a 2.6. And I'm thinking, a Viagra commercial will do a 2.6. I said, what are you guys doing? And they said, well, you know, and they started talking about me coming over there. And I said, well, what's the money? And I asked for the money that I wanted to get from Carlos. And they said, yeah, no problem. So I went over, and I was getting about ready to leave Carlos's anyway. A booker only gets hired to get fired anyway. So, and then it took me 3 months, but as soon as I went over, Carlos's ratings like kind of were going down, and IWA was coming up, and it took me 3 months, and I was like, boop, IWA went over top for only a week. But I think that pissed Carlos and all of them off. But then the next week, my stories kicked in, and all of a sudden, IWA went boop, back up here. Mm. And I led them for 2.5 years. And the highest rating I had in IWA, and people said, you didn't have that high rating, but I did. It was a 21-something. Because wrestling in Puerto Rico was huge. Even on Saturday morning when Carlos's show was on, they did prime time numbers at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So when you can, and you know, most of the people in Puerto Rico, they have blue laws. If you're going to get something done, you better get up and get moving or the stores close on you. Mm-hmm. But we were doing, we hit a 21, and which is the highest number I've ever heard, even in their glory years. But guess who got the credit? Not me. The talent got it, I guess. I don't know. I didn't get it, but...
We shall move on. The first fan question, Steve Quintana. Dear Dutch, why do you think Barry Windham did not have bigger success in NWA, WCW, and later just WCW? Well, he was a WCW champion at one point. I've always been a fan of Barry, especially his heel run. He won the US title, but never got the world title, apart from the time he did. Until way later on down the road. Sorry, there's a full stop there. So there's two separate sentences. Barry Windham.
Barry Windham should have been a bigger star than what he was. See, Barry Windham is a type who's not really flashy, but he's very, very effective. And you believe in the stuff he does because he's a big guy. He's about 6'5", too, and about 250, and had the blonde hair, and he was tall. And yeah, but he's the type you have to take your time on. And I think if they'd have really locked the promotion in around him, I think he would have had great success. Yeah. And I don't think it's any reflection at all on Barry's work. I think it's a reflection on the creative team not giving him the ball. If he can run the ball, give it to him. If he's a pass receiver, throw it to him. If he's a kicker, let him kick. But let him do what his strong points are, and his strong points are, you know, good, solid matches, and not like 10-minute matches. He was capable of going 30 minutes, 40 minutes, or more when he found a heel that could go with him, or even as a heel. I think he should have had a lot more success than what he has. I was a big Barry fan too, and a good guy, really good guy.
Yeah, I've interviewed him as well. He's sort of like short, sweet, and to the point with his answers, but he had some good answers. Did you ever wrestle him?
Never, I never worked with him. And probably because my style was, I was on a different place on the card, but probably it was jealousy on his part because I was so much better than he was. No, he was a great worker, and I would have considered it an honor to work with him.
Since you've not wrestled him, but I think his name sort of sometimes gets forgotten when you talk about the smoothest workers, who just makes it look almost too easy.
He almost too smooth. Exactly. Mm-hmm. You hit it on the head. He was a smooth and. See, remember, wrestler's creed is like the doctor's creed, do no harm. And I never heard of anybody saying, oh, Barry Windham hurt him. He never did that.
Next question. Will, hi, Dutch. Did you ever cross paths with Canada's greatest athlete, Iron Mike Sharp?
I did. His just his dressing room workout. He'd do sometimes. I'd go in there and sit down, and you know, when I sit down dressing in my stretch, and you know, and if I was a smoker, I'd smoke a cigarette, but I didn't, and or if I was a drinker, I'd probably take a beer in there with me, but I didn't have any of that stuff. And so I'd look over in the corner, and there's Iron Mike squats. And it was like 50 squats at a time. And I said, okay, he's warming up. Then I look back over there about 2 minutes later, and he's doing some more squats. And he did 50, or I guess, whatever he did. I said, okay, he's maybe he's slow to warm up. Look over then in 2 minutes, he's doing more squats. Finally, I said, hey, how many squats? And he wasn't a big talker at all. I says, how many squats do you do? He said, 500. I went, what? 500 squats before the match? And he went, oh, yeah, I do it every day. He said, sometimes I do it twice a day. And I went, my God, excellent shape. I mean, he didn't have a big, I mean, buffed up by, but he was in shape and didn't talk a lot. So I don't know. And that's the only time I've ever really been around him. He was non-confrontational. Nobody ever got mad at him. He never got mad at anybody else, strong as a horse. And he's the type of guy who show up on time, go and do his job and get out and take a shower and go home.
Take about four guy. Or five showers, maybe.
Oh, yeah. But and then he did some, he'd do sit-ups too. He'd do something else. But the whole time he was waiting to go to the ring, he was working out.
I also wanted to throw in, he was also maybe Canada's loudest athlete, because every single time in his matches, he'd always go, whoa, 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 just like the noisiest dude in the world. Nothing but sound and motion.
Well, I watched a couple of his matches, but and they were different. They were. But what stood out to me was the 500 squats every, and sometimes he said he did it twice a day. He'd do it in the mornings too, but I just saw him at night. But he'd do them, a lot of them.
Our next question asker is called Kwezi, Cape Town, South Africa. So we truly are international. Hi, Dutch and James. I would like to know whether in your days of being a wrestler, this is you, not me, and Booker, you have seen wrestlers get mixed reactions from the fans. For example, John Cena used to get cheers, hey, John Cena, Cena sucks, which is unique, and LA Knight is a heel, but the fans are cheering him more than ever as a babyface. Thank you very much. So other wrestlers that you've booked specifically, where you've tried to book them one way, but the fans are just fighting you tooth and nail.
Well, I don't recall any specific examples of me booking a wrestler where they took him the other way. Randy Savage was one, probably, if we'd let him go. I only worked with him a year here in Nashville, but he had a lot of fans. He had a lot of fans, and we didn't split the house because I was a babyface and I was a kick-ass babyface, and he was a kick-ass heel, but he had a lot of fans. Now, the way you have to turn these guys is very tricky. You better have a really kick-ass heel to turn them on, because otherwise you're just turning for the sake of turning. So if we had a guy like we talked about Stan Hansen, then you turn Savage babyface on him and it'll work. Or it'll work for a while anyway. And then but those types of things, when you turn a heel babyface, you better be sure you got a heel that's primed and ready to go. Because actually you will kill the heel and the baby and the heel you just turned. So it was very, very tricky. But Savage is one that the people, they wanted to buy him as a heel, but they would have accepted him wholeheartedly as a babyface.
Did Savage play up to the cheers he was getting, or was he trying to do everything in his power to get booed by unanimously?
Well, he probably would. The more he would play up to the cheers, the more they'd cheer him. Because they were getting a reaction out of him by what they were doing. So who was the attraction, Savage or the fans? But it was, that's a tricky thing too. So, but you have to go out there and you got to look at it. And I've said this before, you got to feel the temperature of the room. And then, and I never did anything in haste. I never did anything just as a knee-jerk reaction. I would study it and think about it. And then I'd let more time go by and see if it stayed the same. And if it stayed the same for about a month, I would say, well, I'm going to make the move. I'm going to pull the trigger on it. So, but then again, I never went as far as where I couldn't back up. That's one of the systems I used, and it always worked.
Next question. Tony, not too long ago, friend of the show, Conan, praised you. I use that slightly ironically, praised you for pushing the LAX tag team, even though you didn't exactly understand the culture. What made you like these guys to give them a chance?
Conan believed it. I went off the Conan vibe, because when he would go out there, he wasn't cutting the interview. He was speaking from the heart, because I knew how he felt. So if he felt that way and the Hispanic people in the crowd weren't disagreeing with him, he had something. So that group was a strong group. We could have done more with them. And I wish we had of, because you got to study them, your section of your audience, I guess your demographics of the audience, how many of them speak Spanish, and how much of them might agree with him. But even though when he went Viva La Raza, you know, I mean, it didn't take long to figure out what that means. And they when he would say that, people that understood it would come out of their chairs. So there was something to what he was doing. And since I'd been exposed to an Hispanic environment for several years when I got there, which is basically Puerto Rico, and they love wrestling. And when he was speaking good of them, yeah, of course, you know, they're going to cheer him. So I wish we'd have done more with them. But Conan was a commentator too. The thing about Conan, we didn't know what he was saying. We didn't have anybody monitoring what he was saying, because he could have said anything. He could have said, oh, well, Dixie Carter's this, Dixie, and I don't know. And we wouldn't know about it till it gets to the TV station. I don't know why we didn't have somebody monitoring the Hispanic commentary, which I learned later that they can say a lot of things you never know about.
It wasn't that what Hector Guerrero was for or something like that? Maybe he could have been the guy to report back.
Well, when Hector was there, he was... I think that Conan, I think we replaced Conan with Hector, I think, because we had a problem with, or Conan had a problem with his pay, and he wanted more pay. And I didn't deal with that. I didn't want to deal with that. So they couldn't come to an agreement. So he left.
With LAX, so I was actually watching TNA quite a lot in 2006. I remember thinking 2006, if it was going to be a bit of a tide-turning kind of year, 2006 would have been the year, because you had Kurt Angle coming in that year, Jim Cornette comes back in a creative thing, and on screen maybe as well. But LAX stuck out for me, because I thought they were like the main young team, new faces that had real star power. And if they were in the WWE... I'd see no problem with them being WWE Tag Team Champions. I thought they had great star power.
Who else was there at the time? Was Chris Harris there and James Storm?
Yeah, they were still there at the time, yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't have an answer, but I think we had some big plans for him. But I think Conan, I don't know if he derailed the plans or he left, but something happened within that team or within that group that kind of took their plans off the table. And I think it was Conan and his salary. I don't blame him, but if he's not happy, you know, he needs to, I mean, and I had nothing to do with it.
Well, you did the same thing. I mean, in an answer beforehand, when you went to IWA, you did the same thing. You asked for a raise.
I did. because I thought I deserved a raise for what I had done for the company. And I think Conan and in his job, he was reaching the Hispanic audience, which was quite sizable, I would think, at that time. I think we were on Spike. And of course, I guess we had some tapes going out there to Hispanic areas, and we would always send that tape. But again, that was not my call, and I wasn't in charge of salaries or our pay, so I just separated myself from that.
Very quickly as well, whose idea was it? I hope I'm not misremembering this, but didn't LAX have their own entrance at one point? Whose idea
they
was
did.
That?
That was Conan's idea. And a good idea. I forgot what it was now. What did they do? But they did have a separate entrance.
Yeah, they almost had like, because I know WWE, ECW, they ended up having their own separate sort of entrance away from the SmackDown set, but anyway.
And they had their own separate dressing room. Remember that? They would put all this stuff on the wall.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And that, I don't know whose idea that was, but since nobody's claiming it, I'll say it's my idea.
Good idea. Next question. John Dutch, your podcast is great. Right, this is the version of the question that we've had a number of times.
John and Dutch, or is it from John?
It is from John, and he addresses you, Dutch. Your podcast is great, and he asked the question that a lot of people have asked and have never addressed. Did you ever have anything to do with the Mantell brothers, Johnny or Ken? Were you ever in the same territory at the same time? If so, were you ever a kayfabe relative in the territory? Thanks.
I've been asked that several times.
I know.
The truth be known, I've never even met Johnny Mantell. Ken Mantell, I've met, and his name, and Mantell was a plastic name, like my name is. His name was Ken Lusk, and I met him in Georgia. I never worked with him in Texas. Most of my time during that time, I was in Memphis. But I never met Johnny. And I worked with Ken maybe 6 months in Atlanta, and I had a few matches with him, really. But my name, I had a different name then. I went under my real name. And what was the last question?
Were you ever a kayfabe relative of theirs?
No. Well, I've claimed that they are kayfabe relatives of mine. But I think Johnny was kind of wrapping up his wrestling career or getting out of wrestling by the time I was kind of coming along. And Ken, I don't know when he got out. I think probably, I don't know if he lasted to the 90s. But I guess I was only one of the Mantells that was stupid enough to continue it. So.
Yeah. And you're still going strong. Next question, Mike. What are your memories of the Moondogs? What were they like behind the scenes?
Well, as I recall, Spot, and I forgot the Rex, I think. But they were a wild team. And they were brawlers. They weren't wrestlers. They would go to the ring with the bones and chew on the bones. But I think they had such a crazy look to them, they got over. And they ended up drawing some money in Memphis, some real money. And Randy Colley was a part of them at one time. I think that was one of the Moondogs in Memphis was Randy Colley. And I can't remember the other guy's name. He's passed on now.
There's Moondog Rex, which is Randy Colley. There's Moondog King, which was Sailor White.
I don't remember him. And who was the other one?
Moondog Spots, which I can't remember his name. Hang on. Moondog Spots.
Larry Latham.
Larry Wayne Booker. Larry Latham.
Booker. Okay. I can't remember. I pulled that name out of my hat. I can't remember.
Honky Tonk Man team with him, didn't he? Larry Latham.
Early on, I think. Mm-hmm. Before he became a Moondog. But the thing about Moondog, and what was his name? Moondog Spot or Moondog what?
Moondog Spot was Larry Latham.
Yeah, okay. So I did a show in Memphis one night. And that was the night Larry Latham died in the ring. He died in a match And I think Ricky Morton was in the match. And he falls over and he fails to get up. And man, we've been dealing with a lot of death here lately.
Yeah. Yeah, we have. And, 2003, this was. Yep. Yeah.
And I went down for a kind of a anniversary show or a get together show or old Memphis Legends or whatever. And Spot was there and he had a match, I think, against Ricky Morton and somebody. And that's when he had the heart attack and he died. And I remember that night too, because I remember they pulled the ambulance in right on the floor and loaded him up. But I think he was already passed away by then. Anyway, that's not a very pleasant night.
No, that was Jerry Lawler's birthday bash show as well, apparently, in 2003.
Okay, well, that was it. In November.
Let me check. Oh, well, yeah, it'd be your birthday, wouldn't it? You'll know.
That's right. We had the same birthday.
We'll move on. Vinny Boyette. Hello, Dutch and James. I love the podcast so much. And if you want your question asked, that's the good way to go about it. My question is, what is the funniest thing you've ever said or your opponent said to you in the ring while calling a spot? I heard Bobby Eaton and Rick Steiner in the ring at a WCW spot show about 30-something years ago. Bobby falls on the corner and starts yelling to the ref, "Hey, ref, calm him down. He's pulling my hair, scratching my balls."
Oh, that sounds like Bobby. Oh, I don't know what the funniest thing was. I do remember Jimmy Hart. And every time you would go to hit him, I would grab his hair. And I don't know who else would grab my, but I'd grab his hair so I could measure him. And right before I would throw the punch, he would say, "I love you, poo-poo." Now, who could hit somebody hard when somebody tells them, "I love you, poo-poo." And we started this around, and I changed poo-poo to poopy. "I love you, poopy." And then Robert Fuller, you know, he started using it, and Jimmy Golden started using it. Then all of a sudden, everybody, it was a term of endearment. "Hey, poo-poo. Hey, poopy." But Jimmy, you know, he would be standing on an apron. I'd go over there and he'd go, "Oh God, oh God, I love you, poo poo." And then I'd hit him and he'd take the bump. And it was hilarious. But I've heard a lot of crazy stuff in the ring. That's what stands out though, that I think he said it as a part of self preservation. Because if you hit him hard, you know, I mean, who could hit somebody hard after somebody addresses you like that? Nobody.
You know, I don't know if this might have been WCW in the 90s. I remember it. Apparently, someone was like military press slamming or something like that. And he was calling out to somebody else to help him. And he actually yelled out, "Help me, baby." And I just loved that he said it.
Yeah. Some things I've forgotten now. If I thought about it, I could probably think of some more. But that was the one that stands out. And I love Jimmy Hart. Jimmy Hart was a great guy.
I'm going to skip a couple of these because I'm going to get to this one. Danny Ribeiro. Hello, Dutch. Been watching your show for a year now. It's amazing. And my question is, what do you think about Jesse Ventura? Would he ever come back to WWE or AEW?
Jesse Ventura, go back to WWE? Not no, but hell no. And would he go to AEW? I would also throw the kibosh on that too. I don't think he would go to AEW. I don't think how much money they paid him. I don't know how they would use him anyway. And he was a great announcer. Jesse wasn't that great in the ring. I've had several matches with him. He was okay.
When? I didn't know you wrestled him.
Oh, yeah. I wrestled in Memphis. He was in Memphis for a while. And
is this with Adrian, or was he just there on his own?
I think he was there on his own. He's Jesse Ventura, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, I wrestled him, and he's okay in the ring, but he found his niche with the announcing. But I don't know what he would do in WWE now. I think him and McMahon made a good team because of Ventura's voice and McMahon. And I mean, they actually kind of fit together. And Jesse had a way of talking. I saw him not too long ago at a convention, and he came up to me and he says, "Dutch Mantell." And he was standing right in front of me. Oh man, he hugged me, shook my hand, said, "Oh, it's been a long time." The thing about wrestling is you don't forget these guys that you worked with, you know. And it had been years since I saw him, and it amazed me he even remembered me. But I knew who he was. He's got a certain way of dressing, and you know, if anybody addresses you in that voice, you immediately know it's him. But he was okay in the ring, but I think he will not go back to WWE. I don't see what he would do. I just said that. I don't see what he would do there or AEW. My answer is an emphatic no. You like that word, emphatic?
Emphatic. Do you know, this is just off the top of my head. When you know, because obviously for people who know you're a veteran, do you gravitate any more towards like other wrestlers who are veterans as well in any way, or does that not factor in at all?
At a convention, kind of?
No, when I say veteran, you know, like, military veteran.
I don't understand the question.
If you see another wrestler who is a military veteran, do you gravitate towards going, you know, seeing them more? I don't know.
Not really. It's just one of the things we did. Most of us don't even talk about the military because we don't want to. Because I never talked about it much. And it made me like Road Dogg. He's a veteran. He's always very respectful. And we know that about each other, which actually it makes the mindset when you think about somebody that they served in the military too. It makes you think about them a little differently, but it doesn't make you gravitate to them. It's like anything else.
We have time for one more question, and this is the one that you specifically wanted to answer. Dan Alexander, in the recent Dark Side of the Ring episode on Adrian Adonis, Adrian's close friend was suggesting that maybe 1 out of 100 avoided the partying, no drugs, very little or no alcohol, etc. That, to me, seems very incorrect, because I recall countless times hearing that Nick Bockwinkel, Barry Darso, Bill Eadie, Leaping Lanny Poffo were not part of the party crowd who would get involved in these things. Can Dutch name off anyone who would help prove that estimated statistic wrong, including the names of the people I mentioned? Thank you.
What was the statistic that somebody said? How much did the partying...
Apparently Adrian Adonis' friend said maybe 1 out of 100 didn't party.
Shit. There's a lot of guys who didn't party, believe me. I'll tell you one, I just brought up his name just a few moments ago, Jimmy Hart. Jimmy Hart never partied. Jimmy Hart would go to the town, do the job, go home, or go get a hotel room. I never heard of any partying on his part. I don't think he ever smoked a joint, never took a pill. Here's another one. Jerry Lawler. He never even drank a beer. And the only time I ever heard that he took any kind of a pill was because he legitimately got hurt. And he never did it. And they were a lot more. I'll say, you say the partying. I would, you could almost put Bobby Eaton in there too. He never did it. Coco Ware. I mean, maybe drank a little bit. Or Stan Lane. He may have had some parties himself, but he never followed. And there's a lot more. Here's another one that wouldn't even, if a party was going on, you couldn't drag him into the room. Barry Horowitz. He's another one that. And I know he's never drank, and the only pills he's ever taken are vitamin pills or supplements. There's a bunch more, but I'm going to say that statistic is there's a lot of guys in wrestling that did it as a job and didn't go around and party all the time, because that's how you get in trouble. You get in trouble partying with a bunch of guys in a room, and all of a sudden something else comes in there, and then something else. When I see that, I've been in rooms before and they were all partying, and then all of a sudden some more people enter. Whoop, time for me to go. And I'd walk out the door. Where are you going? Oh, I got to go make a phone call. I got to do something. But remember I told you about the vibe I have of something's going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'd have that vibe. Sometimes something would happen and sometimes something wouldn't. But I didn't want to, I didn't want to test my accuracy. So I just go ahead and leave. So if something did happen, guess what? I had nothing to do with it. So if you just subtract yourself from any situation, you can't be associated with it, nor can you be blamed for it. So it was more like self-preservation than anything else.
I've got a few more names for you that I just wrote down while you were saying things. Owen Hart, okay. Famously. Mick Foley, famously.
No, he never did.
Triple H, he was more or less completely teetotal. CM Punk, of course, as well, he was teetotal.
Yeah, those guys. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, do what you feel comfortable with, guys. Yeah, Triple H was never a big, having a party in a room. He may have, but that's not his gimmick. That's not his. I would be surprised to see him at a party. To tell you the truth,
there's also a correlation with the people who didn't party. Quite a lot of these people are also the cheapest people in wrestling, like Owen and Mick and Leaping Lanny and Barry Horowitz.
Horowitz. I don't know who the cheapest guy in wrestling was. You got to come pretty close. I mean, Mick Foley set the bar pretty high. Mm. I mean, Mick Foley was way ahead of me. And Owen Hart, I've heard stories about him that he would go on a trip and he'd have fans pick him up and they would take him around and they would get his hotel room or he'd stay with them and they'd get up the next day like they were on the road with him and take him to the matches and take him back, feed him. Jeff Jarrett told me that sometimes Owen would come back, say he left with $300 in his pocket and a credit card, he would come back for $310. He would actually make a few dollars on the trip somehow. But and he is cheap. Who else did you say was cheap?
I said Barry Horowitz, Leaping Lanny. Leaping Lanny. All the Poffos are legendarily cheap.
Savage was. I rode with Savage one time. And, you know, we had like, say you went, I'm going to give the, it used to be back in 3 cents a mile. That's what you would pay. So if you went to, say, if you went to Louisville, it's like a 150 up, 150 back, 300, 300 times 3 cents, it's $9. But say if it's 320, it's $9.60. And he would want the 60 cents. So instead of making change, I just give him an extra buck or two. I rode with him a couple of times, but that was the way he was. And you accepted that. And he always, see, Randy, when he was in WWF, because he didn't have to get, they got two separate paychecks, him and Miss Elizabeth, but they shared the car, they shared the room, and they shared the expenses. So actually, he was making more money by taking the partner with him and her getting paid too. So they were spending none of his money.
Mm-hmm.
Savage, very cheap.
Very cheap. Oh, Tony Atlas said on the interview that I did with him a few weeks ago that he would spend a lot of money on his clothes, but then he'd refuse to wash them.
Who's this? Randy?
Yeah. So Tony Atlas said that Randy Savage, he would splurge like crazy on, you know, the finery, the livery.
Yeah.
And then he'd just never wash it.
Maybe. I never was around him in his WWF days. But I remember I don't remember him when I was working with him in Nashville and Memphis. I was never in the same dressing room with him a lot of times. So I don't know. Maybe that's right. Yeah. Maybe it's not. I don't know.
So all you know, he was fragrant for all you knew. Anyway, we will move. We're not going to move on. We're going to shut the podcast down. We got books. We've got podcast. Whatever. You can catch us every Tuesday, every Friday. This is the worst outro I've ever done, probably. And there's been some doozies. But Dutch, do you know what it is? It's lunchtime for you. It's dinner time for me. So I'm going to shut the podcast down now. Thank you very much for watching. We'll catch you again on Friday, 8 a.m. Eastern on YouTube and all podcast providers. You know where to find us. And Dutch, we the people.
We the people.